I'm going to read from the Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 18, called Renunciation of the Perfection of Renunciation, text number 57. Chetasa sarva karmani mai sanyasya matparaha buddhi yogam upashvitya machitaksitadham bhava. In all activities which depend upon me and work always under my protection, in such devotional service, be fully conscious of me. Srila Prabhupada's purport. When one acts in Krishna consciousness, he does not act as the master of the world. Just like a servant, one should act fully under the direction of the Supreme Lord. A servant has no individual independence. He acts only on the order of the master. A servant acting on behalf of the Supreme Master is unaffected by profit and loss. He simply discharges his duty faithfully in terms of the order of the Lord. Now one may argue that Arjuna was acting under the personal direction of Krishna, but when Krishna is not present, how should one act? One acts according to the direction of Krishna in this book, as well as under the guidance of the representative of Krishna, then the result will be the same. The Sanskrit word matparaha is very important in this verse. It indicates that one has no goal in life save and except acting in Krishna consciousness just to satisfy Krishna. And while working that way, one should think of Krishna only. I have been appointed to discharge this particular duty by Krishna. While acting in such a way, one naturally has to think of Krishna. This is perfect Krishna consciousness. One should, however, note that after doing something whimsically, he should not offer the result to the Supreme Lord. That sort of duty is not in the devotional service of Krishna consciousness. One should act according to the order of Krishna. This is a very important point. That order of Krishna comes down through the succession from the bona fide spiritual master. Therefore, the spiritual master's order should be taken as the prime duty of life. If one gets a bona fide spiritual master and acts according to his direction, then one's perfection of life in Krishna consciousness is guaranteed. So the text again. Chetasa sarva karmani mai sanyasya matparaha buddhiyogam upashitya machitak sadatam bhava. And all activities just depend upon me and work always under my protection. In such devotional service, be fully conscious of me. Namo Vishnu Vraya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Sarasvatam Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Srinivadi Paskatya De Satarne. Thank you for coming. Anyone here for the first time? Anyone here for the second time? Yeah, second time. Anyone here for the 150th time? Anyone doesn't know where they are? Two people. This is the end of the Bhagavad Gita, as most of us know, was spoken by Lord Krishna. And this is the formula to become conscious of Krishna. Bhagavad Gita was spoken simply with that aim in mind, to help us actually become conscious of Krishna. Otherwise, Bhagavad Gita remains a mystery. Why would Krishna speak to Arjuna 5,000 years ago, right before a battle, and tell all this intricate philosophy? The most surprising thing is that Arjuna didn't fall asleep during the discussion. Because most of us would fall asleep during 2 hours of philosophy. But it is said that the conversation between Krishna and Arjuna was just like a flow of nectar from Krishna to Arjuna. So how is that? Well, for one thing, it's describing a method of becoming blissful and conscious. But it's a process, it's a methodology in order to gain that. And the first thing is, to become convinced of two things, that is knowledge. One is the eternality of ourselves, the fact that we're eternal. And the second is the existence of a supreme eternal person. Without understanding those two things, Bhagavad Gita makes absolutely no sense. And if one understands those two things, then one can begin to understand Bhagavad Gita. Of course, we've heard many times that our bodies are changing, and we all have that experience. And the fact that we ourselves within the body, we're not changing, we also have that experience. So to understand the eternality of the soul is not very difficult. What to do about it is difficult. Because many people can understand I'm eternal, so what? Big deal. As I said, I was distributing books at the University of Texas in Austin one time, and I met one student. And I was showing him the picture of the changing bodies in the Bhagavad Gita, and baby body, 5-year-old body, 15-year-old bodies. I said, which body do you have? So he pointed to the 20-year-old body. And then he said, oh, wow, that's amazing. I'm actually not this body. So I thought, wow, this is going to be an easy sale of the book. So I gave him the book, and I said, well, take the book. It explains a lot more. And just give a donation. But he gave me the book back and then took my hand and shook it really hard and said, thank you very much. That's great information. I don't need your book, but that's fantastic information. And then he left. So that's called Maya. Most of us are in that same Maya. We hear Bhagavad Gita and we think, well, that's interesting. I'm eternal. That's nice. Anything else? Oh, that's right. Krishna is God. Well, anyhow, it's good that he's God. Someone should be God. He might as well be God. But there's implications to these two aspects of knowledge. One is that if Krishna is actually God, then everything here belongs to him. But that's a little difficult to accept. That means not only this world belongs to him, but even my body belongs to him. How greedy can he get? Even he wants my body. He's one of the body snatchers. And not only my body belongs to him, but I belong to him. Oh, this is too much. I'm a slave. Guy goes, do this. Yes, boss, don't hit me, boss. Even I belong to Krishna. If I accept this philosophy, then I'm simply a 1/10,000th the size of tip-haired nothing. God is everything and I'm nothing. I'm surprised he can even see me. Krishna, help me. Where is he? Who's calling me? My God, what do you need help? You're so tiny. So to accept everything belongs to Krishna is a little difficult. Therefore, there is volumes of books explaining how Krishna created the universe, how Krishna is in every atom controlling the universe, how Krishna is giving us remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. And we hear it all and say, this sounds really interesting, but so what? So to actually accept that everything belongs to Krishna, then the proof of that will be the fact that we're willing to do whatever we're doing with Krishna in mind. What does he want me to do? To actually ask that question, what does Krishna want me to do, is a very advanced stage of Krishna consciousness. We have Sambandha, where we come and we hear classes. And if we stay awake, then we actually understand a little bit, yes, Krishna is God, etc. But when we actually come to the platform, what does Krishna want me to do with his energy? That's called Abhideya. So that's the platform of liberation from the material concept of life. Because no one, if you ask people on the street, what do you think Krishna wants you to do? Most people wouldn't care less what Krishna wants them to do. They've never thought about what Krishna wanted them to do. And often during the day, we may not think very deeply about what Krishna wants us to do either. Least he tells us. and it's not something I want to do. Whereas Arjita Prabhu is saying, he met one devotee in New York, he said, I'm flying to LA because my spiritual master is coming. So that's rather unusual. Usually you fly from LA to New York because your spiritual master is coming. But no, he decided, I'm going to fly from New York to LA because my spiritual master is coming, because he might tell me something I don't want to do. Or throw some flowers at the spiritual master when he comes and then hide. Because we don't want to offend the spiritual master by him asking us to do something we don't want to do and we're not going to do. That would be very offensive on his part, because he doesn't understand me very deeply. In any case, Abhideya liberation to actually, it also takes into account the background information, namely that Krishna has a purpose of this for this universe. It's not that Krishna, he's very creative, he's decided to create one universe here, another universe there, throw a few souls in there, see what happens, watch the whole mess, you know. No, actually Krishna has a purpose for creating the universe, and he doesn't try to hide it from everyone. It's a confidential secret. You live in the universe for a few hundred billion lives and maybe you'll discover it. So Krishna says very clearly, the whole purpose of the universe is to help the souls within the universe wake up to their spiritual identity, specifically in relationship to him. And that's Krishna's whole purpose. That's why he created the universe. That's why he personally comes. That's why he speaks Bhagavad Gita. That's why his devotees preach the message of Krishna consciousness, to help people wake up to their relationship to Krishna. And for one who's engaged in service to Krishna with Krishna's energies, that's the reason why we should utilize the energies. So we're not going to serve Krishna unless we have some kind of experience with Krishna. Why would we serve someone we know absolutely nothing about? Or at least only theoretically, we hear that there's some cowherd boy, he used to live in a village called Vrindavan. He was a good flute player. He had a few unusual activities like stealing butter, but anyhow, everyone has some problems. He was a nice person. He wasn't a vegan. Matter of fact, he probably overindulged in milk products. He had very sticky hands. Whatever he came in contact with kind of stuck to his hand and wouldn't let it go. But he was a rather interesting personality. It seems like flowers and birds, and cows were also attracted to him. In any case, Krishna is certainly an interesting personality, but the question is, why would anyone in modern society become attracted to him? Luckily, to hear about Krishna at least gives one the opportunity to get some idea of who Krishna is, and it's our whole philosophy is based upon the premise that hearing about Krishna and actually associating with him are non-different. That is, we can experience Krishna the more we hear. But we won't hear about Krishna if we don't want to serve Krishna. In other words, there is something called illusion, and that illusion we can experience by the fact that, in spite of the fact that it's very obvious my body's changing, but I'm not changing, I'm eternal, still I don't accept it. Although it's the most obvious thing in my existence, my eternality, somehow or another, due to the influence of illusion, the thing that's most obvious in my existence is the thing that I'm least likely to accept. So that's called illusion. Everyone is subject to that illusion, and we have to fold our hands and appreciate Krishna for the wonderful work of his illusion. the fact that he can capture unlimited living entities in the material world and put them into such a profound illusion that they don't even know who they are, and they think themselves to be something they're not. So that's quite marvelous, Krishna's power of illusion. Now, being under that spell of illusion, when we hear about Krishna, it kind of bounces off our eardrums. It doesn't really go very deep, because if it went very deep, our whole material existence would be spoiled. But we've come here to have a material existence. And what's the whole purpose of the material existence? Is that somehow or another, in spite of my infinitesimal size, I'm going to become the center of a whole universe, or at least part of the universe. Somehow or another, people are going to take me as very important and actually focus their attention and give their love to me. But if I'm actually not this body, if I'm 1/10,000th the size of Tip Heron's size, to actually experience my eternal identity, and what to speak of Krishna would spoil my whole illusion. It's like going to watch your favorite movie, and then someone distracts you, some telephone call comes, and you can't watch the movie. So we've come to the material world to play a part here in the material world where we're the center, and the philosophy of Krishna consciousness is quite a distraction. He keeps on reminding us, first of all, that this body that we have, which we love very dearly, we serve very sincerely, is going to grow old. So that's very discouraging. The thing I'm most in love with is going to grow old. So we paint it in different ways, we do all kinds of things, take our vitamin pills and do a little stretching and hope it doesn't get old too quick. And then it becomes diseased. Somehow or another, I'm not 100% comfortable in my body. I hardly can sit up straight. I eat a little bit too much, and my stomach starts speaking to me. And then we even die. So that, of course, no one believes that. Although there are rumors like that. But we know it doesn't happen to people in Slovenia, because this is not an ordinary country. This is a civilized country. Or as Prabhupada was asked by a reporter in London, why is it that so many people in India are dying? So Prabhupada said, well, as far as I can see, I've traveled all over the world, and everywhere I go, the death rate is about the same. It's 100%. So it's not that the poor Indians are dying, and in Slovenia, we're much more fortunate because we have health insurance. No, the death rate is about the same. It hasn't changed since time immemorial. It's still 100%. So it's rather discouraging to hear about this philosophy. It spoils our whole adventure in the material world to somehow or another make this life successful. Or as the bumper sticker in America says, whoever gets the most toys at the end of life wins. So to make sure I get more toys than my competitors. And so at the end of life, I get a very special gravestone. He got the most toys, or she got the most toys. She won. Therefore, the philosophy of Krishna consciousness is not, generally speaking, advertised in the newspapers. It's not taught at the university. Imagine going to the university and majoring in birth, death, old age, and disease. And then reincarnation. Getting your PhD in old age and death. Probably wouldn't be the most popular subject matter. But that's the reality of what Bhagavad Gita starts with. The fact that currently there is a Supreme Person and he happens to be running the whole universe, and we happen to be in deep illusion, denying his existence and propping ourselves up as something supremely important. But if we can understand that and then be willing to utilize at least some of Krishna's energies and give back the stolen goods, then the result is that our superintendent of this jail that we're in, Maya, will somehow or another release us to some degree and we'll feel some relief from our illusion. Because after all, playing the game where we're the center of the universe is rather costly. It means we have to experience so much fear that our beloved body, which is so fragile, might be put into difficulty at any moment. What to speak of our even more fragile mind? And the most fragile of all is our false ego. Someone can step on my foot, I can forgive them. Someone can even agitate my mind a little bit, I forgive them. But if they directly attack my false ego, well, that's war. That's to the death. So our false ego, which is the most fragile of all our different elements of our existence, we're more or less trying to defend something which is indefensible, which is actually just based upon some very intricate illusion that we've developed. That's what we're most protective of. But if we can give that up, and as it says here, agree to at least try to act as a servant of Krishna's servants. Will not be possible to directly approach Krishna because we don't know Krishna. But we can approach Krishna's servants and find out what Krishna wants us to do with his energies. So that entails that we've understood that actually I'm a spiritual soul, that there is a supreme person, these energies belong to him, and there's something he wants me to do with them. If we do that, then Bhagavad Gita makes some sense because Krishna is telling Arjuna what to do with his energies. And principally, he wants us simply to utilize his energies to glorify him. Now, why does he want to become glorified? Does he have a false ego like we do, but it's just a little bit bigger? He has a godly false ego, and we have an ungodly false ego. No, Krishna wants us to glorify him because that's in our interest. That's how we can actually associate with him, by glorifying him. And he's glorifiable since everything comes from him. Therefore, whatever we find attractive is not different from him. And glorification is simply a symptom of love. Our normal position is to love Krishna and love everyone and everything in relationship to him. And when we're glorifying him, then that love can develop. And along with that love, then Krishna reveals himself. So love also means to utilize our energies to inform others that there is a Krishna. So that's a good thing that there is a Krishna. If there was no Krishna, then we'd be stuck with a few politicians and movie stars and football players to worship, which doesn't seem to lead very much to a very healthy or happy or fruitful result. But if there is a Krishna, who's the best friend of everyone, who's all attractive, then we have an opportunity to tell others about him. Imagine if we didn't know at all that we're eternal, how fearful existence would be. If we didn't know that there was a purpose in life other than making money and spending it for eating and sleeping, how dull material existence would be. So to tell others about that is what Krishna would like us to do. To just tell them what is reality, because that will take away people's unhappy, miserable, material conceptions. And if we find out, then we should do it, as it says here, in order to please Krishna, rather than to take Krishna's position. Generally speaking, everyone in the material world would like to become Krishna. That's why we've come here. Even we find out about Krishna and then tell others about Krishna, sometimes we may do it with the idea is that, see how intelligent I am, I know the truth, you should surrender to me because I am the truth, the way and the light. And no one goes to Krishna except through me. So to give up that false idea that we're actually the ones who are the source of the information, that we are the saviors of the universe, or the people within the universe. And it is very healthy if we do whatever we're doing as Krishna's instrument to please him. And what will be the reward, as explained here, that will think about Krishna. That's what they do in the spiritual world. They simply think about Krishna. Krishna is the source of all love. Krishna is the source of all affection. Krishna is the source of everything attractive. And when one becomes conscious of Krishna, then one feels unlimited happiness, attraction, affection, and love, not only for Krishna, but for everyone and everything as they're related to Krishna. Therefore, one can be happy in all circumstances and understand how to do something beneficial for oneself and for everyone else. Now, as Prabhupada writes here, that this word matparha is important, that one should have no goal in life save and except act in Krishna consciousness just to satisfy Krishna. And while working in such a way, one should think of Krishna only. That I've been appointed to discharge this particular duty by Krishna, and I'm doing it just to please him. Then one will naturally think about Krishna. However, if one does something which is not, do something whimsically, he should not offer the results to Krishna. In other words, if we get some, we do some activity, and we don't like the result, then we offer it to Krishna. Krishna, I have a blind cow, I don't know what to do with it, maybe you can use it. Or one man is walking down the street with a plate of puff rice, and the wind comes and takes the puff rice away, and he cries out, Govinda Bhog, he offers it to Krishna. You take it. So whimsically means that we have no real thought about what I'm doing. We have no thought that I'm a spiritual being. I have no thought that everything here is Krishna's energy, been put here for a purpose. I have no thought that Krishna has representatives or that Krishna has any desire. But I hear there's a Krishna, and so if something goes wrong, then I offer that to Krishna. So Prabhupada writes here, that's called whimsical. That I'm looking around the material world to see what I can enjoy, what I can control. When I find it difficult to control and enjoy, then the problems I offer to Krishna. Here, Krishna, here's my problems. You do something with them. So Prabhupada said, that's not the duty of Krishna consciousness. That order of Krishna comes down through the simple succession from the bona fide spiritual master, and therefore one gets a bona fide spiritual master and acts according to his direction, that one's success of life in Krishna consciousness is guaranteed. One should be appreciative, one should be loyal, or at least recognize the fact that Krishna is actually sending his representatives to help me become conscious of Krishna. If one wants to become conscious of Krishna, then Krishna has his representatives who can give us the information necessary to make progress in spiritual life. But we should not think that they're simply instruments for my purpose. We should understand that devotional service is personal relationships, and that personal relationship starts where one becomes a servant of Krishna's representatives. Now, there may be a perfect representative, like Srila Prabhupada, who perfectly understood how everyone is Krishna's servant, and that he also is Krishna's servant, and because he's a perfect servant of his servant, of the servant of Krishna, therefore he knew perfectly how to, at every moment, how to serve every other living entity appropriately. Such expertise and transcendental knowledge and discrimination is not very common. But Prabhupada also has his assistants who are repeating the same message and following to the best of their ability, and therefore they're also counted as assistants to the perfect representatives or acharyas in disciple succession. So one should also serve them. Serving a representative of Krishna or the representative of Krishna is also part of the disciples' succession. Although one should serve in the Hare Krishna movement, and the background has to be the guidance of Srila Prabhupada's example and instructions, and therefore we serve others also in the background of Prabhupada's example and instructions. But that doesn't mean we just serve Srila Prabhupada and we neglect his representatives also. That would be very unfruitful. Srila Prabhupada created an ISKCON movement. He wanted these books distributed so we can learn how to exchange these loving relationships also with Prabhupada's representatives in this ISKCON movement, and therefore make progress towards becoming perfect devotees also. Prabhupada was a perfect servant of not only his acharya, but because he was serving his acharya, he knew perfectly how to serve every living entity also. So if we serve the acharyas, then we'll know how to serve every living entity, not only the acharyas. And that will be our perfection of loving exchanges in Krishna consciousness. So therefore, that order of Krishna comes down into disciple succession. So in the background of whatever we're doing, we should keep those instructions and examples, perfect instructions and examples, so we know how to perfectly serve every living entity appropriately. How to appreciate even those who are only chanting Hare Krishna, how to cooperate with those who are trying to distribute Krishna consciousness to others, and how to appreciate those who are more advanced by example and by instruction than we are, and try to become as sincere a servant as possible to assist others in spreading this Krishna consciousness movement and our own and other people's development of Krishna consciousness. Other than that, that's all the Hare Krishna movement has to offer. Most people who join the Hare Krishna movement don't become rich. Some do, but more often they don't. They don't necessarily even become more healthy. They eat better, though. The prasadam is better. But other things, from the material point of view, may not be considered very advanced. You don't get better clothing. You don't necessarily become more popular with people in general. You won't win a general election in Ljubljana. People won't appreciate the hairstyle that some devotees have. But we will become conscious of Krishna. And if we become conscious of Krishna, then our spiritual life will be successful. Our material life will be a disaster. But that's the choice we have to take, whether we want to inflate our false ego until it pops, or we want to actually develop our little tiny spiritual consciousness so we actually, our life becomes spiritually meaningful and we become happy and peaceful and understand what the goal of life is and how to achieve it. So we have to make a choice, whether we're going to spend another life propping up a false ego to have it burst at the time of death, and then only Krishna knows where we're going next. Or we can try to develop our spiritual consciousness and become actually peaceful, happy, and be able to help others towards the real goal and meaning of life. So, thank you. Hare Krishna. Any questions? Yes.
How can you differ between spiritual and material concepts, like the latest dua, or is this the main difference? Material concepts.
Spiritual concept is everything here belongs to Krishna and is meant for his service. And we have to serve Krishna under the guidance of Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. Everything else is a material concept.
Shastra. Thank you.
Yes.
Hare Krishna. Thank you for this lecture. What is pure consciousness? Since we try to become humble servants, how is that connected to us?
Well, our first business is to remember what Krishna's representatives have said. We have to look at our circumstances that we're under and then think, what does Krishna want me to do to please him? And in order to find out what Krishna wants me to do to please him, we have to think of the instructions and example of Krishna's representatives and pray to the Super Soul within our heart to give us the intelligence, understand it. And if we, in a prayerful mood, we think carefully about what Krishna wants me to do, then Dadami Buddhi Yogam Tam, then Krishna will give me the intelligence what to do and how to do it in order to actually please Him and become conscious of Krishna. So if we do that in that spirit, then that activity is perfect. And how do we know it's perfect? Because we'll think about Krishna with devotion. And that's the highest achievement we could possibly do or have, is to think about Krishna with devotion. Everything else is just superficial. We may get our name in the newspaper, friends may appreciate us, our enemies may curse us, but if I'm thinking about Krishna with devotion and sincerely trying to please Him and His representatives, then whatever I'm doing is perfect. Anything else? Yes.
How is it possible that a self-centered person begins to glorify someone else specifically?
Well, because we're always glorifying someone else. This body is not us. Although we love the body, we're very happy when people take pictures of us and people ask who we are, and we're willing to tell them our whole life history. But actually, we're not the body. The body is just a movie that we're watching. When we're watching a movie, there's always a hero or heroine in the movie that we identify ourselves with. So this present body is nothing but a three-dimensional virtual reality image that we're identifying ourselves with. But it has nothing to do with our real identity, our real nature. So if we really want, there's no such thing as not being a devotee of something. Either we're a devotee of the material energy in the form of this body or other bodies, or we become a devotee of Krishna. We have to worship something. Either we worship Krishna or we worship this dead body. Either we worship the living spirit, source of all bliss and knowledge eternally, or we worship a dead body, which is only going to be the cause of our misery. That's the choice we have to make. So a human form of life means to have the intelligence to make the proper choice. The animals, they can't make that choice. If we become a dog, then we'll worship that dog body as long as we're in that body. If we become a demigod, we'll worship that demigod body as long as we're in that body. But in the human form of life, we can change our worship from our gross and subtle material body. We can change it to worshiping Krishna. If we have proper intelligence, spiritual intelligence. All right, thank you very much. Krandaraj Bhagavad Gita, ki jai. Srila Prabhupada, ki jai. Gaur Premanande.